Imagine that you have a new neighbor who moves in, and it's someone who has come here from another country, an immigrant. For some of you, that's not hard to imagine. You may already have a neighbor like that. We do. And imagine what it would be like to strike up a casual conversation with this person who you are glad to meet because they're from Malaysia or Malawi or Mauritius, or it doesn't matter where they're from. They're not from here. But they really want to be a good citizen of the United States. And so as the conversation goes along, they ask you, what does it take to be a really good American citizen? That's what I want to be. So you think for a moment, you go, well, you really need to keep the laws of the United States. And you might begin to think about some of those laws that are so important in the United States. Laws about how we treat people and how we treat property. You can't steal the property of someone else. We don't allow that in the United States. And when you get angry with someone, you can't strike them or hit them. You certainly can't kill them. That would not be very good citizenship. And you might say, look, you can't say false things about people. You can't write false things about people. You can't go to court and testify falsely about people. That doesn't make you a good citizen. And then you might think, well, there's also civil code. You have to drive your car at the limit of the speed that's posted there on the sign. You can't go faster than that. If you do, you're not a good citizen. Or you have to have insurance on your vehicle. You can't just drive. That would be careless and cautious and have no caution. You wouldn't be a good citizen. You can't litter. That's not what a good citizen does. You can imagine your neighbor kind of listening to this litany of laws that you give to her and kind of nodding her head. And then saying, well, okay, so I got to learn all these laws. What else do I do? And perhaps you'd say, well, you'd follow a really good citizen. Find someone around you that really is a model citizen. And just pattern your life after theirs. That's good advice. Is there anything else? If you want to be a really good citizen, you got to uphold the Constitution. Do what? Uphold the Constitution. Learn it and do everything you can to support the Constitution of the United States. And at this, the immigrant person next door looks at you and says, that old document from a couple hundred years ago? Seems odd. And you say, yeah, that old document, the Constitution, it's pretty important for us American citizens. For those of us who have pledged ourselves as members of God's kingdom, of the kingdom of Jesus, we have a deep passion for being good citizens of the kingdom. One of the reasons I love being around Centerpoint is because I feel like I'm with a whole group of people who have a common passion to be good kingdom citizens. And we might ask, like our immigrant friend, what does it take to be a really good citizen of God's kingdom? Well, certainly you have to learn his laws and obey them, right? You know, if an angel came and told us, we might say, well, you go to church and read your Bible and have good devotional times and do the things that the New Testament requires of us. Give your money, support the church, so forth. You might even say that one of the things you got to do as a good citizen is to follow the model citizen, the king himself. Follow Jesus. Yeah, that would make really good sense. But there's something else. To be a really good kingdom citizen, you got to follow the Constitution. To follow King Jesus, you've got to follow the Old Testament. To be subjects of the king, you have to be subject to his laws. And then the Old Testament. Now some of you are going, wait. I think you fell off the deep end here, Vic. You lost a screw somewhere. We're New Covenant people. We're New Testament people. Certainly you're not going to advocate that we go back to the Old Testament law. All kinds of good reasons why we wouldn't go back to the Old Testament law, right? I mean, first of all, think of it. It's just irrelevant. Yeah. I'm not living in the land of Israel. I'm not a Jewish person. I don't have to plow a field. I don't have any oxen or donkeys. It speaks to issues about clothing and sacrifices and temple, and I don't have any of those things in my life. Certainly, we don't go back to the Old Testament. It's irrelevant. But even more profound is the idea that in the New Testament, we're told we're no longer under law, right? We're under grace. We're told that Jesus came and introduced a new covenant, and therefore the old covenant has been made obsolete, according to Hebrews 8. Where would we get the idea that to follow Jesus, we follow the whole Old Testament? There are actually three reasons that's true, and they all come from the very mouth of Jesus himself. In our passage this morning, Jesus gives us three reasons why we are to follow that old constitution that we call the Old Testament. Those three reasons were given to the people in the first century because they also thought, you know, there's just no way that this king can be trusted. They were afraid he's going to lead him away from the Old Testament. And he was assuring them that that old constitution was still quite valid in certain ways. Matthew chapter 5, we're going to be looking at verses 17 through 20. And I want you to see the three reasons that we are to indeed follow King Jesus by following the Old Testament. And the first reason is going to be in a single verse, a single statement by Jesus, where we find that Jesus himself perfectly followed the Old Testament. Follow the whole Old Testament because Jesus himself perfectly followed the Old Testament. Matthew chapter 5, verse 17. We'll read just the first verse here. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. Jesus perfectly followed the Old Testament. Let's look at some of the details here to understand exactly what Jesus is saying he wants his disciples to believe. He explains in this passage his purpose for coming. I have come in order not to do one thing, but in order to do something else. You caught it, right? I've come in order not to abolish, but to fulfill. I've come, he says it twice, not to abolish the Old Testament. In fact, he refers to it as the law and the prophets. The idea here is it's the whole Old Testament. The law would probably be referring to the books of Moses, the first five books of the Old Testament. And the prophets, probably everything else, everything that was reflected on in the law by the prophets. Jesus is saying, I didn't come to do away with or set aside any of that. Wow. That the whole thing is valid for you. He didn't want to render it invalid. But by his lifestyle and by his teaching, he would demonstrate its importance and he would fulfill it. Now, this is important for those people in the first century who are quite concerned that a new king is going to come and set up a new kingdom and establish a new law and a new constitution. And Jesus is telling them, no, I'm connected to the old law and the old constitution, if you understand it properly. He calls his relationship to that one of fulfillment. What does he mean? I don't think the idea here is that
He's fulfilled it as if he's fulfilled it and it's completed and we don't have to worry about it anymore. That's not the point. It's not like he fulfilled it and it's done. We're done thinking about it. But rather, to fulfill in this context is one of showing his full support for it in the way he interpreted it, in the way he practiced it, in the way that he taught it. He considered himself the king proclaiming the true meaning of the Old Testament. He fulfilled it. He upheld it. What he did most was fulfill the purpose for the Old Covenant. He fulfilled the purpose for the Old Testament. And what was that purpose? Okay, Bible scholars, why did God give Israel the law? Two primary purposes. The law would reveal God to the people and enable them under covenant to help the nations see who God was. Exodus 19, verses 4 through 6, God says to them that he's making them into a kingdom of priests, a royal nation, a holy nation, a nation separated from the other nations by this law, so that as priests they could bring the other nations to God, and God would see what he was like through them. And Jesus says, that's what I've done. What Israel could not do, Jesus did. Jesus has fulfilled the law in that he demonstrated fully who God is by his obedience and interpretation of that law. And in so doing, he brings others to the Father. Jesus perfectly obeyed the law. He upholds the Constitution. Think of it this way. Every president of the United States takes a vow. A vow that goes like this. I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will do and will, to the best of my ability, that interesting clause, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Jesus could come and say, I have, not to the best of my ability, but perfectly defended and preserved and upheld and explained and accomplished the Constitution that comes from the Father. The Old Testament itself, consummated in Jesus Christ. He took the oath and perfectly executed it. Why should we strive to follow Jesus by following the Old Testament? It's because Jesus, our King, did it. And we follow him in this. Our King accomplished the purpose of becoming a priest for God, bringing people to God the Father by his obedience to the law. And he calls us to a similar task. All his actions, all his teaching, all his behavior reflected what was valued in the Old Testament. Ours must as well. To follow King Jesus, the first reason that we have to strive to keep the Old Testament is because Jesus himself did so. There's a second reason in this text, a reason that says we have to follow the whole Old Testament because the whole Old Testament is valid for this entire age. The whole Old Testament is valid for this entire age. Look at verse 18. It says, I tell you the truth, Jesus speaking, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Nothing goes away. Wow. Why do we follow the Old Testament? It's because the Old Testament is valid for this entire age. Jesus' disciples were to believe this. From the smallest letter of the Hebrew alphabet, a little yud, which you can hardly see, a little like a comma, to another little serif stroke. It'd be like the difference between a P and an R in English. Just one stroke of the pen. Jesus says, no meaningful mark of the Hebrew alphabet will be changed, will be allowed to slip while there is time on earth. Until heaven and earth pass away, the Old Testament is valid. It's pretty hard to believe for us, isn't it? Because we are people of the New Testament. We are people who like I said, we believe we're not under law. We're people who really hold dear to our hearts the idea that the New Covenant and the priestly ministry of Jesus has made the Old Testament and the Old Covenant obsolete. That's what it says in Hebrews 8. So how do you put these two together? I believe what Jesus is saying is that the Old Covenant, the Law and the Prophets, the whole Old Testament, in all that they were intended to teach, does not go away. That their true meaning, their true value, which isn't in the externals, but it's in the internals, that it endures forever, as long as we are here in this age. The Old Covenant was taken too often to be about externals. And Jesus will demonstrate in the rest of this Sermon on the Mount as we continue in the weeks ahead that he's talking about internals, attitudes, values, ethics, morals. Those things affirmed at every stage of the Old Testament endure throughout time. The old law was indeed a schoolmaster, an external authority that was given to God's people to lead them forward. But as long as they viewed it only as a schoolmaster and didn't take the values, it was being interpreted improperly. Jesus says, the Old Testament, properly understood, expresses the values of my kingdom, and it will endure through all of time. It works like this. Let's say you're driving in Dallas, and if you've noticed, there are speed limit signs posted all around the city. On the expressways, I believe most of them say 60 miles an hour. And so being good citizens of this kingdom, you recognize that you should drive 60 miles an hour, give or take a few miles an hour based on traffic. And then you decide to take a trip, and you end up in West Texas. And let's say you find out in West Texas that, you know, they've kind of taken the speed limit signs down. And there aren't any speed limits. Does that mean that when you get to West Texas that you can just go as fast as you want to without any regard for anyone or anything else? No. That's not what the law of the land really is. The law of the land is that you will drive in a way that is safe for conditions. The value of the speed limit law in Texas is to protect the well-being, the health of all the drivers on the road. And here in Dallas, they say, hey, we're going to tell you what that is. It's 60 miles an hour. You get out to West Texas, all right, we'll let you decide. But you better decide properly. There's a trust level out there that says we won't dictate it to you, but you better uphold the spirit of the law. As we've moved from the old covenant to the new covenant, we've moved from an age where God gave lots of specifics to his people about how to behave, into a new age where many of the road signs have been taken down. But the spirit of that old law, the internal values, continue to this day. and throughout this day. We keep the speed limit because it's anchored in the value of the Old Testament. Perhaps another way to look at it is how we even treat laws within our day. I like to see how laws are reflected in our country. Some of these you might find humorous. Did you know that in Tennessee, there's a law in the books that says it's illegal to use a lasso to catch a fish? So those of you who are fishermen, please don't use your lassos in Tennessee. In Dryersburg, Tennessee, it's illegal for a woman to call a man for a date. So men, if you're looking for a date, don't go live in Dryersburg, Tennessee. And here's one of my favorites. In Memphis, it is illegal for a woman to drive by herself. Now, I've driven in Memphis. I can tell you they're not following this one, but it's on the books. And here's why. It says a man must walk or run in front of the vehicle, waving a red flag in order to warn approaching pedestrians and motorists that a woman is driving. Can you just see that? But it's not just Tennessee. Even Texas has some pretty interesting laws. Did you know that the entire Encyclopedia is banned? Encyclopedia Britannica is banned in Texas? Do you own one? You could be illegal. It's banned because it contains a formula for making beer at home. Here in Texas, it's also illegal to milk another person's cow. In case you were tempted. Now, these strike us as very odd laws, don't they? And yet, I'm certain that each one of those laws was written in a setting and in a time for very good reasons. To protect people. To show respect for people, to preserve a certain kind of honor. Those laws, although they're meaningless to us today, they reflect a value that we would probably still hold to today. Jesus says that the Old Testament law, in its entirety, not missing a jot or a tittle, that the Old Testament law in its entirety is valid today. I don't think he's saying that every specific related to Israelite culture is valid today. But the values in it, reflected in the very careful wording of every law, every story, every prophetic utterance, those values continue today. So if we're going to follow King Jesus and be good citizens in his kingdom, we must follow the Old Testament completely in what it really teaches. We've seen a couple of reasons of why we should follow the Old Testament. It's because Jesus perfectly upholds it. It's because the Old Testament itself endures through all of time. There's a third reason here in this text. And it says that we follow the whole Old Testament properly because it increases our status in the kingdom. It increases our status in the kingdom when we follow the Old Testament properly. Huh? That's what it says. Verses 19 and 20. Let's look at it. Anyone who breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Jesus is saying that you've got to follow the whole Old Testament because that doing so increases your status, your reward in the kingdom. Notice how he says it. He says it, first of all, kind of negatively, and then he says it positively. He says, if you fail to obey, the first part of verse 19, if you fail to obey these commandments, if you teach others not to obey these commandments, if you mess these up, you'll be considered least in the kingdom of heaven. But, last part of verse 19, if you will indeed obey these commandments and teach others to do the same, then you're considered great in the kingdom of heaven. And then he gives us a hint of what he's talking about in terms of teaching commandments. Because certainly with this kind of a statement, the scribes and the Pharisees and those who followed the experts in the law in his day would be saying, man, we've got such good teachers. They can tell us the law inside and out. They recite it. They tell us exactly what it means to observe the Sabbath and to give our sacrifices to God. They tell us how much money to give to God. They are really on top of it. And Jesus says, verse 20, unless your righteousness, your obedience, exceeds that of those experts in the law, the scribes and the Pharisees, you don't even enter the kingdom. Now, be careful here. Jesus is not saying that you can obey your way into the kingdom. The subject here is not how to get into the kingdom. He's talking to people who are already in the kingdom, people who are already following King Jesus. What he's saying to them is, my desire for you to follow the Old Testament in its entirety, the way it was intended to be spoken, not the way that the scribes and Pharisees interpret it, is what will gain you increased status in the kingdom. This would have shocked people listening to Jesus. For they revered the scribes and the Pharisees. They couldn't imagine anyone who was more righteous, more godly, more austere than these experts of the law. And Jesus says, nope. Your righteousness has to exceed those external displays. For you see, it'll become apparent in the verses that we look at in the rest of this sermon that Jesus is very concerned about not an external show of righteousness, but an internal value system that reflects exactly what the Old Testament law was really about. It wasn't about shows and demonstrations. It was about having the heart of God and His King motivating all behavior. And the result, Jesus says, is greatness in the kingdom. Increased status. That almost sounds kind of like selfish, doesn't it? You probably didn't wake up saying, I want to be great in the kingdom. But we should. Our aspirations are distracted to so many trivial things. We desire to be great students, great athletes, great businessmen and businesswomen, great husband, a great wife, a great American. Such lowly aspirations are these. May God grant us a passion inside of us to be great in the kingdom. That Jesus would smile upon us and say, there is a model citizen. There is someone who's so passionate about what I'm passionate about that they have the heart of God. May we envision a God saying to us, you are highly esteemed because you're passionate about my values. Because you love what I love. And you obey what I want to be obeyed. And with this desire, we'll strive to keep the Old Testament law, not just externally, but internally. We'll not be satisfied with the kind of righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. And we have them in our day as well, right? It's easy to measure a righteousness that says, if you go to church 3 out of 4 Sundays or 2 times per week, and if you cut your hair a certain length, and if you wear your skirts a certain length, and if you read your Bible a certain number of times, and if you have a certain length of devotional, if you do this, God is pleased. And Jesus would say, you've missed it. For it's not about the external displays that bring status in the kingdom. It might bring the smile of men, but with God, it's taking the values that He has internally that motivate our behavior and how we teach others. And He says, you've excelled as a citizen of the kingdom. We've seen three reasons for that we have to strive to keep the whole Old Testament. What does it look like? Maybe we walk away from here this morning saying, you know what? I've been a little casual about the Old Testament. I kind of like the stories, you know? They're good for the kids in Sunday school. There's some really fun things with David and Goliath and Noah and the Ark. And, you know, some of those Psalms are kind of cool. It seems to me God would have us take those 39 books and commit ourselves afresh to understanding them and internalizing His values. So that, like our King, we might be a kingdom of priests who represent Him to the world and draw others to Him. We are immigrants, citizens of a kingdom where we were not originally born. What a great thing it is to take the old constitution, put it in our hearts, and follow it fully for Jesus' sake. And so, our Father, we ask that as we strive to follow the King, that our hearts will be turned to the truth of the Old Covenant. Not because it's irrelevant or anachronistic, but, Lord, because it is indeed undying in the truth that it proclaims and your values. Help us to follow King Jesus, because He followed the law, a law that never ends in this time, in this age, and will bring us great reward in the kingdom. We ask because we want to be pleasing to you.